Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. As always, excited to be with you here on a Wednesday morning, every Wednesday, 7 to 9 a.m. here on The Morning Voice. It is October 1st, man. I am excited. We have officially finished the slowest month in the Tucson restaurant season over there, and income season right here on October 1st. There are so many things going on.
I feel like Fred Willard in A Mighty Wind. What happened?
Yes.
Here we are. It's October 1st.
So glad to see it. Let me tell you, pretty much every restaurant and hospitality business in the Old Pueblo right now is excited to get to the month of October with just everything that's going on. However, there's been a lot of news these days that a lot of businesses are closing up shop in Tucson. It always amazes me that people make it through the summer and then would choose to close up shop like the first week of October, like right when things are finally starting to get good.
Right.
Up front, Food City has announced their closing in South Tucson, right? The last remaining grocery store in South Tucson, located at 2950 South 6th Avenue, and they are out of there. They're pulling up shop, and they basically blamed what we're not going to be shocked by, taxes and crime, right? South mm-hmm. Tucson has the highest tax rate in all of Southern Arizona, yeah. And of course, a lot of crime happens in these particular stores, making it tough from a retail perspective when you have so much product just out there willing to or ready to be pilfered in some capacity by our continued unhoused and unmitigated population that just wreaks havoc on all of these retail operators over here. And now we're bearing the fruit of this. I mean, we're one step away from a city of Tucson, not just utility over here, but this is getting close to the government grocery stores right. that they've always wanted. Yeah. But we've
it's just not calling it that.
Yeah, but we're creating conditions with really high taxes and really high crime that unfortunately take away even services that we come to depend on, like having a grocery store. And that one is kind of heartbreaking, man. Like, I'm not too happy to see South Tucson lose their last remaining grocery store.
A couple of data points for you. Me and Kelly were down there just the other day. And first of all, the Congregation of Humanity on the overpass over the freeway there was interesting. Secondly, and these were not people going to and fro. These were people just kind of being there, right? Just hanging out. And the second thing was we made a quick stop at the Silver Saddle for a delicious meal. And they've got a guard in the parking lot, right? Just because they've had issues in that area. So South Tucson Police was talking about setting up a little field office in the Food City thing and sort of a last-ditch Hail Mary to kind of save the store, right, for the residents of South Tucson. And it sounds like that may not have – well, too little too late, I guess is the right way to put it. So, you know, you see indications of it in the vicinity of the Food City, and it's really sad to see.
Well, and on top of that, we're getting news that 7 Starbuckses are closing here in Tucson. Now, normally I want to follow the local restaurants, and I know that sometimes we veer off into the chains over here, but that's kind of a canary in the coal mine, too, to see what's happening here in the Old Pueblo when they shut down a number of newer, underperforming stores. First and foremost, we're losing the Starbucks, the new one that was at Campbell and Grant, the one that everybody got really spicy about, that we had somehow blocked the whale mural that Joe Padgett had made, and they had just built this new store. I mean, this thing is a year and a half old, and they've announced that one's closing?
That one and the one here, 22nd in Columbus, that one is just about the same vintage. The thing that I didn't really even realize, the one on Campbell and Grant is like, I don't know, a stone's throw away from the one at Campbell and Glen. I mean, are they within a half mile? Is yeah. it north or south of Glen? I mean, they're very close, whichever.
And so they did a bunch of construction in the last 10 days at the Starbucks at Campbell and Glen yeah. because you couldn't make a right turn yes. into that Starbucks from southbound Campbell, which was kind of an odd thing given that it was on the right-hand side of right. the road. And they had forced you over to Glen mm-hmm. and you had to enter around that side. And now they've tweaked that concrete and the ingress and egress and made it such that you can do this. So that must have been part of their logic, was like, well, as long as we can fix this part of this other Starbucks, we've just got them, quite frankly, too close to each other.
And the one near Glen is at least catching this morning southbound traffic where it's an easy right turn in and out. That other one, I mean, just thinking about it in that terms is a kind of a sporty entry and entry exit in the morning.
Without a doubt. And one only has to look at the union participation in Starbucks as well, too, to think that perhaps there's some element of concerns about the unionization of Starbucks that has prompted some of these closures. One of the other big ones that's closing down is the one on University Boulevard, right on the same side of the street as No Anchovies and Illegal Pete's. It was a Starbucks right there. And that one's been there for years. And that one's been the hotbed of unionization in Tucson. That particular Starbucks has unionized with its 11 or 12 employees and really caused a lot of brouhaha. We haven't seen unionization pop up in restaurants, full-service restaurants in Tucson, because quite frankly, the tips, the second you go to the front of house employees and you say, you know what, guys, we're thinking about unionizing over here. Even if you've got a lot of left of center college students working for you, the second you go and you touch the tips, the second you say, you know what, guys, like, let's unionize and just equitably distribute the tips between the front and back of house, the unionization argument comes crashing to a halt. But in Starbucks, because that line between front and back of house is so blurred, mm-hmm. the unionization problem is and has been very real. And it's not surprising that the ones such as on University that had chosen to unionize are in the crosshairs marked for death. The other odd one is downtown, the Chicago Music Store location. And that one I always sort of lamented, because that was a really, really cool and important corner downtown to be right there on that south part of Congress. You know, the old Chicago Music Store has so much character, and they didn't even fill the entire building. They just took like the valuable corner part of this one as well too, and created sort of a app order only Starbucks. It was like a Starbucks light.
Sure.
And that one has gone out as well too. So 7 total Starbucks closing in the old Pueblo in the week of October 1st. Kind of shocking to think that they made it all the way through summer.
They made it right to the gateway of the, this is like their high holy season, pumpkin spice latte season. And they make it right to the cusp, to the opening of pumpkin spice latte season.
Without a doubt. The other thing that makes the news on closures, of course, you're going to see it all over the paper today, is the government shutdown. And I noticed over the last couple of days, this same sort of narrative popping up in the Arizona Daily Star. The Grand Canyon needs to shut down. They're going to destroy it. And it reminds me what we saw in the paper only 3 months ago, when they were like, the big, beautiful bill is going to destroy the Grand Canyon. They're going to sell the Grand Canyon. They're going to. And every time anything the government does anything, suddenly the national parks are up for sale. If we were going to park a Buc-ee's or something in the base of the Grand Canyon, right? This huge shutdown. And
it'd be a winner, though. A Buc-ee's in the Grand Canyon would be a winner.
And so I just want our listeners to keep their eyes open for that one, how this narrative just continues to pop up that the Grand Canyon and Sabino Canyon and Mount Lemmon are suddenly going to go up in flames, right, based on these particular government moves, which really isn't necessarily the case, right? Government shutdowns happen because we've got 435 Congress people that have to get together and agree on something over here. And every once in a while, it has to reach this stalemate, mm-hmm. to really get people to move across the finish line. When you think of one big, beautiful bill, it's so big that there's probably not one human being on earth, not one of those 435 politicians that would say, I love everything that's on this, right? It's a homogenization.
Some people are going to not get what they, everybody's going to get something that they don't want.
Yes.
If everybody's upset about it, that's always a good sign, right?
Correct. Yeah. But I just can't see how our local paper just continues to sensationalize the idea that suddenly these hallowed national parks are for sale or shutting down or going to somehow just be absolutely crushed because of this, when nothing could be further than the truth.
Maybe some of the roads that deliver the paper from Vegas go through national parks, and that's what they're worried about, access to get the paper over here. I don't know. Okay, that comment's on me. I'm sorry. That was a snarky comment. But
Well, looking at responses from the city of Tucson based on the federal government shutdown, it looks that in response to the federal government shutdown, the city of Tucson is also going to shut down and no longer charge for bus services, and they're no longer going to be able to patrol our parks, and they're no longer going to be able to keep our streets safe over here, I guess, as well, too. So we've got our own shutdown going on here in the city of Tucson. The difference was that it's been going on for the better part of the last decade and has nothing to do right now with what's happening federally in any capacity. And those are the things we should all be paying attention to. Those are the things that we should have our eye on the prize over here if we want to make the city of Tucson a better place. I just got back in town last night. I was actually in Cape Breton Island, Nova Scotia, visiting my parents, like the birthplace of my grandfather with my parents, and got to see a part of Canada where the Scottish people migrated across the pond from Scotland and went to our original family homestead and checked out Cape Breton Island. Now, this is kind of a downtrodden place as well, too. Sort of a singular economy based on mining up there that closed in 2001. And ever since then, it hasn't been so great up there in Cape Breton Island and for those Scottish people. And it reminds me of the city of Tucson as well, too, that if we don't take care of our businesses and we don't take care of our industry, you can end up in situations like that one. And so it was a really fascinating and eye-opening journey, a great opportunity to visit my folks before season started over here and talk about my family's Celtic heritage. Now, to lead into that one, when we come back after the break, we're going to bring on Angela Nelson, right? The Tucson Celtic Festival over here. She's both a treasurer and organizer of the Tucson Celtic Festival that's going to be happening in just a few weeks at one of my favorite spaces, the Rideau Downs. And so Angela Nelson's going to join us. We're going to have a fantastic discussion about the Tucson Celtic Festival. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. You know, I love talking all things local here in the Old Pueblo, whether it's restaurants, whether it's businesses, or even more importantly, whether it's events. We've got a lot of cool things coming up here in the month of October, and one of my favorites happens to be the Tucson Celtic Festival. If you don't know, the Tucson Celtic Festival is happening at the Rideau Downs, and I'm a big fan of all things Rideau Downs, finding ways to repurpose this property, finding ways to have it be a multi-function cultural center that could have horse racing, that could have concerts, that could have food events, that could do all kinds of neat gatherings, because it's in such an amazing, amazing location right at First and River. And I'm lucky enough to be joined today live in the KVUI studios by Miss Angela Nelson, the treasurer and one of the organizers of the Tucson Celtic Festival. Good morning, Miss Angela.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on this Wednesday and talking all things Celtic Festival with us. So why don't you give a little background about who you are to our listeners over here that might not know of Angela Nelson?
Well, I'm the treasurer for the Tucson Celtic Festival. I've been doing this for roughly 5 years on the board, and I started as a volunteer about 13 years ago.
These always tend to start with volunteer work, yes. Right? That's kind of how it works.
Right. But I fell in love with it, came back year after year, and then at one point in 2020, they asked me to be on the board, and I said yes.
And so this Celtic Festival has been going on for a while here in the Old Pueblo, no? Like, how long is this? What year anniversary are we having right now?
This is our 39th year.
39 years of the Celtic Festival in Tucson. That's a pretty long run.
Yes, it has been. It's been a wild ride.
Has it been at the Rideau the entire time?
25 years it's been at Rideau.
And what makes you guys choose the Rideau Downs?
Basically, the location primarily, and they allow us to do a lot of things that other event locations will not.
Uh-oh, like what? What are we talking about over here?
We can sell our own alcohol. That's
understood. You get a special event liquor license, right?
Like exactly.
The Series 15,
yes.
For those keeping track at home?
Yes, absolutely.
And then 25% of those sales have to go to like a 501c3 nonprofit?
Right. And we're a nonprofit, so we get to keep all of it.
Love it.
That keeps the festival running year after year. That's about 30% of our sales.
Of course, I can imagine. I mean, somebody in the restaurant business, I've said for a long time, we're a house built on, well, vodka in some capacity. And so there's no question that the sale of beverages help pay to do cultural events like this.
Right, absolutely.
So 39 years, let's break down the dates right now for the Celtic Festival.
Well, we started in 1989 is when we were incorporated. And it's been a 100% volunteer organization since the very beginning. So year after year, we try to build and build on, make even better the next year better than the last.
And this year, it's going to be at the Rideau Downs starting on Friday, October 24th?
That's correct.
And it goes until?
Sunday, the 26th.
All right, break down, like, what are we getting at the Celtic Festival on Friday? Like, what's the itinerary look like over here?
So Friday night is our Viking night concert, and that's where we open up. This year we have dancers, bands, food and beverages available. And then Saturday starts our actual festival where we have the Scottish Highland Games. We have a Highland dance competition. as well as all things Celtic on the field. We have clans, food, vendors that sell Celtic items, as well as plenty of entertainment.
All right, so let's talk about Highland Games a little bit. Like, what does this entail?
Oh, Highland Games, it's lifting a lot of heavy stuff and throwing far. We have the caber toss, which is roughly, if you can think of a telephone pole, they weigh anywhere between 40 to 80 pounds.
Okay, that's a pretty...
Hurl it.
That's a pretty serious process over there then.
Yes, it's very difficult. I've done it myself and it's not easy.
You've done it yourself. You've done caber tossing.
Yes, I've tried at least.
How did that go?
Not well.
Yeah, I can't imagine being able to do that. Where do you practice that?
Actually, we have a local group, the Tucson Celtic Hammerheads, and they practice at Reed Park.
No way.
Sunday mornings.
So I'm going to have to go out there and Reed Park sometime and just see these guys tossing cabers out there. That's amazing.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It is.
So what other, besides the caber toss, because that's kind of the most famous one, I think, the most noteworthy of all the Celtic games over here, because it's just such an awkward look to see a grown man in a kilt heave a telephone pole across a field for maximum distance. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other games that you guys do?
Their other events are weight over bar. There's also weight for distance, the sheaf toss, which is another infamous one that actually started in Ireland, and that's been adapted to the Scottish Highland Games, and they toss a bag filled with straw.
Okay.
Up over an upright. And I've seen people break records on our field.
Wow. So these are real feats of strength over here, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No airing of grievances, though, just feats of strength?
I don't know about that.
So mostly we're talking about like strength and conditioning events in some capacity over here. Are there races?
Absolutely.
Like, give me any other Celtic games that you can think of that they do.
Well, let's see here. Wait, bar, sheaf. Oh, the hammer. The hammer's infamous. That is very similar to track. You have a weighted ball on the end of a PVC pipe in our case, but they spin that around and then toss it. And some of these folks can toss it pretty darn far. You're talking 80, 90 feet, even further.
That's amazing. Well, so, and this is on Saturday specifically, if you come in.
No, it's actually Saturday and Sunday is the Highland Games.
Okay, so 2 days worth of games.
Absolutely. We have the Scottish, the Southwest Scottish Masters happens on Saturday, and that is for our Masters, which is the older groups, 40 to 49, 50 to 59, and 60 and plus athletes. And then on Sunday, we have our Open A, B, and C athletes as well. And let's not forget, Saturday we have the men's lightweight, and Sunday we have the women's lightweight.
Got it. Is that lightweight as in lighter weight on the equipment or lighter weight on the people?
Lighter weight on the people.
Okay, got it. Do you know how they break that weight class down?
Like, absolutely.
What's the difference?
Men, they have to weigh under 200 pounds, and okay. Women, the new category is 155 pounds or less.
Okay, got it. And so they split them up that way so that there's a chance basically for the smaller people, because otherwise there's going to be some pretty big Scots out there, tossing these around. So break down the tickets for me. Can you buy tickets for the entire weekend? Is it per day? Like, are there sponsorships? Like, how does that work?
We have all kinds of ticket packages. Right now we've started a VIP experience package, which includes all 3 days. Plus you get a whiskey tasting ticket and a tea tasting ticket with it, and a t-shirt's included, as well as a swag bag. And then we have 3 day passes, 2 day passes just for Saturday and Sunday. And then you can buy single day tickets, and children are actually free this year up to age 12.
Wow, that's cool. It's a really family friendly event then. I
mean, absolutely.
Where else can you take the kiddos for free these days?
Right. Yeah. So, and then teen tickets we also offer as well. That's a discounted price for teens.
Amazing. So this sounds like a really great opportunity for families to get out in the sunshine. What are the hours of the Celtic Festival on, like, Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
So Friday, our gates open at 5 and they close at 10 p.m. Saturday opens at 8 a.m., closes at 10, And Sunday opens at 8 a.m. and closes at 5.
And how late does the live music go out there? Because that's a question that's always near and dear to my heart as someone that's put on a number of live music shows over at the Rito and continues to get in trouble for doing live music in St. Philip's Plaza over at River and Campbell on the regular. Like, how late are they letting you guys go in Pima County?
9:30 is okay. The cutoff at Rito. That's been a new rule, but 9:30 is when we have to have amplified music off.
Yeah, we've got that same rule for the Conquistadors as well, too. We've got a concert coming up. I can't say the artist just yet over at the Rito, but on the 20th of March, we're going to be doing a live country music concert with respect to the golf tournament, right? The Colo Guard Classic as well, too. And so we've got a big name in country music that'll be coming to Tucson on that day. And same thing, 9:30 p.m. Like, it's crazy to me that on a Friday or Saturday night in a multi-purpose, multicultural gathering center where thousands, many, many thousands, like we got, you know, almost 8,000 people, like close to 9,000 people, I think it was, for the Roger Klein and the Peacemakers in Midland show a couple of years ago. And yet it has to stop at 9:30. Like, it mystifies me that they won't let us go just a little later, like 10:30, 11 p.m. We're not talking about doing a concert until 2 o'clock in the morning. But gosh, it always breaks my heart that we can't do something a little more fun for just a little while longer.
Right. I agree with you. I have some insight as to why, but I won't discuss that here.
this might be a little bit of
a fun commercial break for the news.
Yeah, we might have a couple things to talk about over here off mic. Why don't we go to commercial break over here and I'll break up this segment, hear from a few local great sponsors, because we do appreciate all those sponsors that keep local talk radio for you free. And thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. Miss Angela Nelson, treasurer and operator the Tucson Celtic Festival, coming back up with more Add in the Morning Voice with Grant Kruger. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m. on The Morning Voice. We bring you local talk and news, 5 different days, 5 different people, 5 different viewpoints on how the city of Tucson, how Pima County is doing out there. On Mondays, you get Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, bringing you his engagement hour with heavy-hitting politicians and civic leaders. On Wednesdays, you get me, Grant Kruger. We talk a little bit of local business, restaurant news, with just a dash of politics on the side. On Thursdays, you've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing you wonders from the University of Arizona. But we've got another segment over here with Miss Angela Nelson. She's the treasurer of the Tucson Celtic Festival. She's been a board member the last 5 years, a volunteer the last 13 years. And they're having a little outdoor festival from the 24th to the 26th of October at the Rito Downs. Welcome back, Miss Angela.
Thank you for having me.
No, excited. Let's talk a little bit about Celtic backgrounds over here. What got you interested in the Celtic Festival up front? You must obviously have an ethnicity that lines up with this.
Absolutely. I'm 80% Celtic. I have ancestors from Ireland and Scotland, as well as Spain and Portugal.
That's so cool. I love like learning about our family's history. And I always find it so interesting because almost all of us are like some sort of Western European blend at this point, right? On the Celtic side, like nobody's probably 100% Scottish or 100% Irish. But I was saying before you came on, I took a trip just this week to Cape Breton Island, Nova Scotia, which is New Scotland, right? And my ancestors come from South Uist Island in Scotland. And we're basically dragged across the pond because it was a lot more profitable to raise sheep on the land than it was to have people. And we're sort of forced upon Canada to the rugged forest and trees of Canada. And in Nova Scotia, there's still like people that speak, thousands of people that still speak Gaelic to this day. There are signs that are in English, and then just underneath it, it's all still in Gaelic. And my family was given by Queen Victoria a land grant of 180 acres of forest up in Cape Breton Island, is where my grandfather was born. And I now, with my mother, own that piece of land and went up and visited the churches where our Scottish family was both born, where my great-grandparents were married. And it was really amazing to just see how many Scottish and Celtic people are in that neck of the woods in Canada. Like, unbelievable to see. And it makes me excited for things like the Tucson Celtic Festival to see that this is happening here in the old Pueblo as well, too. It's amazing to think we have this many people with Celtic heritage in the 520 in southern Arizona.
Yeah, it is absolutely amazing. We actually have a resident chief here in Tucson, Chief Richard McBain.
Tell me a little bit about Chief Richard McBain and how he becomes a chief.
Well, it's hereditary. His father was the chief, and his father's father, obviously. Richard took over, abdicated his chiefdom. It was, I believe, last year. When his father passed.
Amazing. So he's basically the chief, like, of his clan. Like, talk about
his clan, yes.
Talk about clans a little bit over here, Angel. Let's discuss, like, clanship. What does that entail?
Well, clans is basically your heritage, what family you came from. They're the main clans. Like, personally, I am a part of Clan Campbell. I'm actually the sept of Clan McKellar. And the McKellars in history were, I don't know how to put the right word, but they were assimilated by the Campbells. And, you know, during times of war, things happened and people became servants and slaves to others and stuff. So that's how the McKellars became part of the Campbells. So each clan has its own rich history. We have about 30 clans this year. At the festival.
That's a pretty big run.
Yeah, absolutely. And amazingly enough, most of them live here in southern Arizona.
It's amazing to think that us Irish and Scottish people made our way to southern Arizona being so fair-skinned. I kind of come from a long family of burn peelers. I don't know if you know. It's just like the way the sun bangs us up a little bit over there can be kind of tough, for sure. We weren't necessarily built for this.
No, that's why we have a lot of shade at the festival.
Yeah, I think when my family came across the pond from Scotland, right, landing in Nova Scotia, this is basically up near Greenland, right? It is cold and rainy and gray, and it's the convergence of two of these, of the biggest northeasterly weather patterns that hit and land right over the top of Nova Scotia and Cape Breton Island. And I think they got there and they were like, Angus, this island is cold and rainy and gray. It's just like home. And they settled and they loved it. And literally generation after generation has lived over there. And it's amazing to see people still speaking a language like Gaelic, because now I think there's only, you know, in the numbers of tens of thousands of speakers of Gaelic remaining even in the world, right?
Right. Unfortunately, it is a language that most people do not study, but luckily at the festival, we have the University of Arizona Celtic Linguistics is going to be with us. So if you have any interest in learning Gaelic, they will be there to talk to you.
Is there like a program at the U of A? Like, can you study Gaelic at the U of A?
You absolutely can.
No way.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, I'm going to have to go and take a look at that one. I had no idea that that was available over here.
We can talk in code with each other. Maybe I'll go too.
Yeah, you come with me.
We can talk in code to each other.
I love it, because Spanish isn't going to fly talking in code over here in southern Arizona. That's not exactly secretive. But if you're rocking Gaelic over there, you definitely have a secret language. Now, you have a lot of sponsors that help you out with this event over here too, no?
Absolutely. This year, we were lucky enough to receive a grant from the Arizona Commission on the Arts. We are also sponsored by Stambeck, and a big one that we have this year is Will Scott.
That's amazing. I love Stambeck, actually. We do a lot of work with them, too, in the Tucson Conquistadors. Really great group. And they're the purple dumpsters and porta-potty people. No one gets excited on the radio talking about porta-potties. But when you're putting on a big event like this, it's a lot of work to put something like this together. How many volunteers do you have helping put on the Tucson Celtic Festival alone?
Normally, it takes about 160 to 250 volunteers. We do need volunteers, so if you are interested, please go to the website.
What is that website?
It is www.TucsonCelticFestival.org.
And so we're still looking for volunteers out there to help. What would a volunteer do right now? If somebody were to go to the TucsonCelticFestival.org website, what would you put them to work doing?
Well, we have many different shifts available. There's positions in the kids area helping with arts and crafts. There's a volunteer check-in helping with that, helping with merchandise, ID check. You name it, we'll find a position for you.
Who does the bartending for you guys and sets that one up?
It's actually our friends with Silhouette Bartending. They donate their time.
Amazing. What a great sponsor to come in and help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. They're great. We love them very much.
And what kind of expected turnout? I know you can't predict with any great degree of accuracy, but when you think of October 24th through the 26th, you're talking about pretty good weather, right? Like, this is a really nice time to be outside. Like, what kind of turnout do we get from the Celtic festivals in the past?
On average, we have about 5,000 guests at our festival.
Wow, that's a pretty big turnout.
Yeah, it is. It's very big. It's a big project, but we love doing it.
Is there enough parking to pull that one off?
Absolutely. Rideau has their own parking lot that we share on Sunday with
the farmer's market. Yeah.
Right. But since they've redone the parking lot a few years ago, it is much easier for people to park. And there is no charge for parking.
That's a big, great farmer's market over there in the Rideau as well, too. Manish Shah has run that one for many years. He used to be in St. Philip's Plaza, actually, as well, too, for many years with us. And then there was a great schism. And now there are two farmer's markets, one in St. Philip's and that bigger one that's at the Rideau Downs every Sunday. And that's a real nice draw as well, too. So you could basically, the farmer's market's still going to go on that weekend on Sunday the 26th then as well, too, right?
Yes, absolutely. We actually partnered with them for a couple years in a row where we do some advertising for our festival there. We advertise for them too.
That's super cool. I mean, think what a great way to spend a Sunday, October 26th, nice time to be outside. You've got an amazing farmer's market. We've got an amazing Celtic festival. You can come check out. Kids under 12 are free as well too. Like, what more can you ask for? We're really blessed in the Old Pueblo to have awesome events like this one. Why don't we take a quick break here for some amazing local sponsors? We're going to have one more segment with Angela Nelson coming up, talking all things Tucson Celtic Festival. Hour two, we're going to have Victor Cuevas on, owner of the Tucson Baseball Club. We're going to talk local baseball over here, live professional ball coming back to the Old Pueblo in just a couple weeks as well, too. More engaging local talk on 10:30 a.m. The Voice coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we're lucky enough to be joined for one more segment by Miss Angela Nelson, treasurer of the Tucson Celtic Festival and Highland Games. Hey, Angela, we haven't touched on one of my favorite parts about Celtic culture, which is the music. Are we going to have bagpipes over there? Where can a man go get some bagpipes around here?
Absolutely. We have bagpipe bands. We have three this year. We have the Tucson District Pipe Band. As well as the Northwest Fire and Drums will be there. And we have a third band, and I'm so, so sorry. Oh, it's Phoenix. How could I forget? The Phoenix Pipe Band will be there.
So three different bagpipe bands. When are these guys playing? Any idea?
Well, they play all throughout the day.
Okay, cool.
This year, we're actually featuring them on our main stage, our I Love Sky stage. As well as a performance stage, and they have their own area, so they'll be going on all day.
And there are other bands as well, too, playing on this, yeah, besides for bagpipe music, right? This isn't just 12 hours of bagpipes in some capacity. We screwed up in St. Phil's Plaza years ago on an Oktoberfest event, right? Because we had Oktoberfest. I was like, we need like a German-Austrian polka band, right? And we got a band called the Bouncing Czechs.
I'm familiar with them. Yes, the Bouncing Czechs.
And
CZ.
And they were very nice people, and it was really awesome. And I think for like 45 minutes, we were like really into it. But then by the time you got to about hour four, it was a lot. You know, there were some people being like, wow, like this is intense. There's a lot over here. So what other kinds of music, what other kinds of bands do you guys have?
Well, we have music ranging from folk to rock. So we've got Celtica Nova. They are our headliner. They play flaming bagpipes.
Flaming bagpipes.
Okay. Now yeah, you got my attention.
Yes, you had me at flaming bagpipes over here for sure.
We also have
acid bagpipe music.
It's wonderful. They're great. Great guys. Great group of guys. We also have Traveler. Scott Jeffers Traveler. He is excellent world band. We've got Noble McCoy and Out of Kilters. Desert Rovers, and our new special guest this year is Celia Ferran. She is an Irish singer.
Very cool. So there's going to be music basically all weekend, but predominantly Saturday and Sunday then?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, it goes on Friday night as well.
And you were saying before the break that there was whiskey tastings over here. Like, let's talk a little bit about that. You also pique my curiosity when we talk whiskey over here. So you're talking to a real whiskey fan and snob. So what are you guys bringing? Who's showing up?
Well, let's see here. As far as whiskey tasting is concerned, we have four tastings on Saturday and two on Sunday, and they're headed up by Jude McKenzie. She's a friend of ours from the Flagstaff Celtic Festival.
And you were telling me that Jude is a whiskey sommelier, right?
Yes, she's a sommelier. She is an expert in her own right. She travels to Scotland every year to the different distilleries. And so she comes out here to talk all things whiskey with our patrons.
Amazing. I love a good Scotch whiskey over there. I learned to drink Scotch from my dad, actually, because it was so often so peaty that none of my friends or his friends would want to drink the whiskey that way. You know, early when you were young, it wasn't necessarily a preferred beverage of choice. And so you could keep your bottles around. And so I've been a big Scotch guy ever since.
Right. Well, Jude talks about that. There's different kinds of whiskey, and not all of them taste peaty.
Understood. Well, I'm looking forward to that talk over here. There's a tea tasting as well, too.
Yes, our tea tasting is sponsored by Scented Leaf. There are two sessions on both Saturday and Sunday, and they will talk to you about all things tea.
I love that. That Scented Leaf is Shane Barella, right? A alumnus of the show over here as well, too. Scented Leaf Tea Rooms had great success throughout Tucson. They've got a location on University. They've got a location on downtown. And they've got a location just down the street from the Maverick over there at Grant and Tangaverde, right next to us. And they're just kicking butt. I've been really impressed to see the Scented Leaf Tea Rooms growth over these last few years. And they've opened up on Broadway as well, too, in the Sunshine Mile. And so they're really, really doing great things. That's awesome to hear that they're sponsoring the Celtic Festival as well, too, with a tea tasting. Now, you were saying there's going to be a mass as well, too, on Sunday, the Kirkin. Can we talk about that?
That is correct. We have the Kirkin of the Tartan. That is hosted by a Reverend Andy Ross of Northminster Presbyterian. He's our chaplain, and he will host that at 1:30 on Sunday.
Super cool. I might have to go check that one out. I just got the opportunity to visit St. Margaret's of Scotland in Nova Scotia, the old Celtic church, like where my great-grandparents were married. And it's pretty cool to see and feel the levity of something like that. And I'd love to see and experience a Celtic mass service. I think it'd be really amazing.
It's very family-friendly. We celebrate all our tartans and bring people together.
So let's talk about, we only got a couple minutes left over here. Let's talk about tartans, the plaid. What's the significance of the plaid tartans in Celtic culture?
Well, it represents your family clan. That's what they wore to identify themselves.
And so essentially, if you saw somebody wearing a kilt of a specific plaid pattern, this tartan, that's how you knew whether they were a friend or foe.
That's right.
Pretty wild. And so what are the colors in your tartan over here on the Campbell side?
On the Campbell's, it is navy blue, a little bit of yellow, green, and I think black. There's different varieties. So you
there's
have
like
your
a dress
ancient,
version.
Yes, there's ancient. There's a Highland dance one. There's it just depends. And then you have your modern.
So this sounds really amazing. Again, listeners, this is October 24th through the 26th. So coming up in just about 3 weeks, the Tucson Celtic Festival and Scottish Highland Games. There's going to be Scottish games, right? Caber tossed, feats of strength. Matt may be airing his grievances out there yet.
It could happen.
Yeah.
The day is definitely young.
Yes, without a doubt. There's going to be live music. There's whiskey tastings. There's tea tastings. Why don't you break down for our listeners one more time your websites and social media where people can get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is www.TucsonCelticFestival.org. You can find us on Facebook at Tucson Celtic Festival, as well as Instagram under Tucson Celtic Festival and The Real Tucson Highland Games.
The Real Tucson Highland Games. Is there a fake?
Except no substitute.
Yes.
There is no substitute.
There's no imposters going on over here at all in the Rito Downs. You're still looking for volunteers out there as well, too. So if people are looking to help, where would they go? To the website?
They would go to the website, and at the very top, you'll see a volunteer button. Click that and read all about it. We actually give our volunteers some perks for coming. You get a free t-shirt. As well as entry for the rest of the day. And if you donate more than 1 4-hour shift, you can actually get a ticket to come back to the festival.
That's really cool. So those that want to go out there and help and participate and keep cultural festivals like this one alive, right? We've got to all fight and do our part to do events like this at the Rito Downs, to have a multi-purpose community park that can have farmers markets, that can have horse racing, that can have concerts, that can have food festivals, that can have the Tucson Celtic Festival and Scottish Highland Games. So do go out there and support that one. Miss Angela Nelson, I want to just say thank you again for coming to spend part of your Wednesday with us on The Morning Voice.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Looking forward to seeing you out there and all you listeners for the Tucson Celtic Games this October 24th through the 26th. What time does the gates open on that Friday again?
Gates open at 5 p.m. on Friday and 8 on Saturday and Sunday.
Amazing. We're all looking forward to it. Matt and I are going to be out there tasting whiskey and waiting for the flaming bagpipes. I just really want to see this one go off.
There you go.
Here. And so we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We've got a whole nother hour coming up of The Morning Voice. We're going to break down local restaurants' openings and closings and some changes. And there are still quite a few on the list over here today. And on the second part of hour two, we're going to have Victor Cuevas coming on, the owners of the Tucson baseball team. They're bringing in the Arco Liga de Pacifico into the old Pueblo. We're about to have professional baseball back again. Don't go anywhere. Amazing hour two of The Morning Voice coming up after the break.
Hey, this Saturday, October 4th, join KVOI 1030 The Voice at the U of A Hispanic Heritage Tailgate starting at 8:30 a.m. at the Bear Down Stadium, just north of the Arizona Stadium. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to hour two of The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. It is October 1st. There is so many things starting up in the old Pueblo. Nobody wants to do things in September, but let me tell you, in October, there is just lots of cool things going on. That was a great talk with Angela Nelson,
sure,
the treasurer of the Tucson Celtic Festival. So that will be something to check out at the end of this month. But popping up just this weekend is one of the bigger days in U of A sports over really what is about a 14 or 15 hour period. And this starts on Friday night, right? You've got the red and blue game, which is, of course, the showcase of men's basketball and women's basketball programs with scrimmages and dunk contest and three-point contest and the like over at the McHale Center. And everyone gets really excited about basketball over here. But this is year two of post-move, which is a post-game celebration as well, too, on the Bear Down Field, located just north of the stadium. And post-move now has Shaquille O'Neal showing up as well, too, for this one. So you've got Mixmaster Mike from the Beastie Boys, you've got Shaquille O'Neal, and DJ Tom E, which I'm guessing is Tommy Lloyd over there as well, too.
And thinking that's a good guess.
So pretty cool after party going on after the red and blue game right across the street from the McHale Center at that Bear Down Field. And if you just wanted to stay late and stay the night, you've got a tailgate starting on Saturday at 6 o'clock in the morning as well, too, Matt. 6 a.m. here in Tucson.
Kegs and eggs, as the kids say.
It's a noon kickoff, right? Oklahoma State, we're a big favorite because they're not a very good football team, so everyone's going to turn out and be really excited for us to win. I think we're a 21.5-point favorite last time I checked.
Mike Gandy is in the hot seat, as they say, or did they actually get rid of it? I think they parted ways with him, so Oklahoma State's not in a good spot, right, at this particular moment.
Correct.
Good news for the Wildcats, hopefully.
Especially coming after the loss of last weekend.
Yes,
but that tailgate starts at 6 o'clock in the morning, and on that exact same Bear Down Field, like only hours after Shaq and Mixmaster Mike from the Beastie Boys are playing, you've got the Johns and then Roger Klein and the Peacemakers as well,
I'm
too,
telling you.
In the morning. Huge. And so, like, you're really going to have to just spend almost 16 or 17 hours straight at the U of A. I think we should move the Star Village Encampment Center and put it actually right there at the U of A for, like, those 4 or 5 hours that we could just go to post-move and then just not go anywhere and just wake up right again in the morning and get to work tailgating and celebrating U of A
football.
There
will be stars there.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And this Saturday at Bear Down Field, at the site of the Roger Klein and the Peacemakers concert, and Tom E., Mixmaster Tom E., on Saturday, you can join 1030 The Voice at the U of A Hispanic Heritage Tailgate. It's going to start at 8:30 at Bear Down Field, which is, again, just north of the stadium, adjacent to the north end zone. And you can celebrate Hispanic Heritage and the kickoff of the college football season, at least the home stretch of the Big 12 season, as we take on Oklahoma State at noon. And KVOI 10:30 a.m. will be there, as well as our sister stations Poderosa and Urbana and The Groove. And you might even see a Morning Voice host or two if you stop by and say hi.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. We might be out there, may or may not be enjoying an adult beverage in the morning over there. No judgment, right? But that's a really great thing that KVOI is going to be part of, that particular bear down bash, that particular tailgate that's happening in the morning. They're going to be there starting at 8:45 in the morning, but really that tailgate gets cranking right at 6 a.m. Break out the breakfast burritos and the Bloody Marys. It's one of the best times of year in the Old Pueblo. When we're talking restaurant news at the top of the hour, we of course talked about the number of Starbucks closures that were happening here in Tucson. 7 different Starbucks stores announced they're closing this week, which is, you know, not exactly something that we want to celebrate, any business closure, anybody losing jobs. Big talk was, of course, as you said, the Arizona Inn selling. A buyer group, which includes former Wildcat Steve Kerr, has announced the purchase of the 95-year-old Arizona Inn. And so that's going to be really neat to see that property get redeveloped, a little new energy, a bit of new blood. They haven't announced the sale price or really what their plans are yet. It's just kind of breaking news in the last 12 hours or so.
There are a few details, and if I can get the email in front of me, there were a few details in the email that the hotel sent out yesterday. While we're talking, I'll see if I can find it real quick. But
an important property, right, located on the east side of Campbell, sort of in front of the TMC or UMC area out there.
Indeed.
As well, too. But this one is going to really need a bit of new energy and new life to it as well, too. 95 years is an amazing run, an amazing business success story for a family out here. But quite frankly, it was a tired property as well, too, that I don't think was often mentioned in the breath of other fine dining restaurants in Tucson anymore, in the same way it might have been with Hacienda del Sol or Vivace or other great local restaurants. And so it'll be neat to see that one pop up over here.
Seems
as well.
Like it was never they had a protracted, I guess would be the right word, shutdown for COVID.
Yes.
And that it just seemed to have not have been the same since.
Yep. I agree. A lot of businesses haven't come back from COVID. The former living room space at La Encantada has been empty now for 5.5 years. And a little birdie tells me there's a local operating group that is going to open up a champagne and wine bar and tapas concept up there. So that one will be coming soon. We'll work to get those potential owners out here on this show soon as they look to embark on what should be a pretty splashy restaurant project here in Tucson. We're getting a new Bubby's Bagels location, also on the Sunshine Mile, right? Mark Frankel, the owner of Bubby's, has done a great job. He was Pizzeria Luna on the east side, has a Bubby's in the former Luna location in that center there at Speedway and Wilmot. He's got a Bubby's at River and Campbell as well, too. And there's a new Bubby's coming up in the Broadway and Tucson area in the Sunshine Mile, the Solot Plaza. So that's super cool to have a local bagel shop growing. This was kind of a world dominated by the chains, the Brugers and the Einsteins. And so it's pretty cool to see a local bagel bakery growing and moving forward. As well, too, Salad Nation has closed their Park Mall location in preparation for opening on the northwest side of town in Oracle and Orange Grove. We had Omar Salarzano on the show just a few months ago. I didn't know they were going to close that mall location, but that lines up yet another closure inside of the food court in the Park Mall. It's a real shame to see those locations just turning over and over and over again. And it leads me to believe that there's something bad going on with those spots, because it seems to be untenable when well-heeled local operators that have product that people seem to like are immediately packing up shop and heading out as well, too. And so that one looks to be donezo in the Park Mall, but they're coming up soon in just the next few weeks. Not shockingly, trying to get open right here at the beginning of season, like so many other restaurants. As well, we've got Charo Chico has announced that they're converting it into a catering kitchen as well, too. The Charo Chico is located at Campbell and Prince in that shopping center where Guinea's French Cafe and where that Safeway is over there.
Sure.
And so
yeah.
So I think with their focus on the Charro Steak concept growing, they didn't have as much luck with the partnership with Barrio Bakery in that spot.
Right.
It would turned into a sort of a QSR version of Charro, and now it's going to become their catering kitchen, and it's just going to be open for lunch now, like 10 to 3 p.m., and no longer doing dinner shifts over there as they focus on their catering operations and look to use that kitchen to do some of their large event spaces. So that's pretty cool as well, too. Again, lots of events happening over here. The Tucson Roadrunners season starts on October 10th. Their home games start over here on October 18th against the evil Calgary Wranglers. I do love some local hockey over here, and we were up in Cape Breton Island. We got to go see the local hockey team, the Cape Breton Eagles, play a hockey game. And goodness gracious, for a town, Sydney, Nova Scotia has maybe 30,000, 35,000 residents. Like, it's not that big of a town. And their stadium and their Jumbotron was substantially bigger and better than what we had in the TCC for their local hockey team. Yes,
okay.
They take them pretty seriously over there. I sent some pictures to Bob Hoffman, the president of the Roadrunners. I was like, we're going to have to work together and up our game over here on hockey for the Roadrunners.
Please tell me we have a better Zamboni here in Tucson.
I like to think so. Okay, you know, yeah. It's got the Truly logo, the Truly Nolan logos
sure.
on that one
okay.
as it goes around. But I do think our Zambonis were maybe a little bigger and better in some capacity. There's also rumors on the street of new ownership coming to the Tucson Sugar Skulls. Looks that there is a local group looking to acquire that particular team. We'll bring that one up in the next couple weeks as that starts to become a developing story over here, and look to get some of those ownership to talk about that team on the radio as we look to support local sports here, particularly things that are not the U of A, right? Like local professional teams here and the Old Pueblo. And when we come back after the break, we're going to bring on the Cuevas family. Both Victor Jr. and Sr. are going to be live in studio. We're going to talk professional baseball in Tucson. You guys know I've been talking about getting pro ball here for a number of years on live radio and podcasts, lamenting the days, the loss of the Tucson Toros, lamenting the loss of the Sidewinders, and the Cuevases are here to do it. Their season is coming up. They're starting in just a few days. Their first home game is going to be October 16th against Hermosillo. Victor Cuevas Jr. and Sr. live in studio talking Tucson baseball when we come back after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. You know, I love local sports over here and love the idea that we could bring back some local sports that we've been missing. I have to say that of all the things that Tucson's blown it on in some capacity, the loss of professional baseball, both the AAA and the spring training, probably ranks up there as the highest thing that people talk about in a lamentable way, that somehow we really blew it when we lost them. And for years, people have been talking about, how do we bring back a team? Can we get a AAA team? Can we get a major league team? Can we get spring training? And one thing that people hadn't really thought about was just the high quality baseball that exists just south of the border with us, right? Most people haven't spent time seeing a game in Hermosillo or seeing the Obregón Yaquis play or whatnot in the Liga del Pacifico. And starting in just a couple weeks, we're going to have our own Tucson baseball team here in the Old Pueblo, and we are lucky enough to be joined live in the KVOI studios right now by Mr. Victor Cuevas Jr. and Sr., owners of the Tucson baseball team. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Grant.
Good morning, Grant.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come join us here on KVOI, The Morning Voice. You guys have opening day in just a couple weeks over here, so you must just be going crazy right now, huh?
Opening day is going to be October 16th, so it's practically 2 weeks.
Oh, my goodness. You guys must be absolutely stressing out right
yes.
now. I can only imagine. I know those few weeks before opening a restaurant of how stressful and difficult that is for me. I can't even imagine how it would be starting your own professional baseball team over here. But you guys have a lot of experience. This team isn't necessarily a brand new team in that sense. This happened to be the Mayos de Navajoa, right? So why don't you talk a little bit about the history of the Mayos?
Well, yeah, the Mayos de Navajoa has been playing in this league for over 60 years. That team has been in my family for the last 30 plus years. So we're not new to the league, to the sport. We needed to change venue, to change our city, because of the league kept growing and growing and growing, and our city was the smallest in the league. We just couldn't keep up with that growth. So we were looking for a city that loves baseball, so Tucson came to mind. And then we needed a city like almost a million people plus, you know, the population to sustain that, you know, that professional baseball. It's expensive professional baseball, you know.
Without a doubt. It's yes. It's much more expensive than people might
yes.
think.
Yes. But in that process, we just kept, you know, thinking about Tucson. The league wanted to, for a couple of years, they wanted to internationalize, you know, make that leap. And then we have yearly meetings with MLB. We are associated with MLB. So a couple of years, they brought it up too. Like, why don't you should explore moving into Arizona, you know, being close to the border. I mean, our league is placed, you know, down south, you know, in a straight line. So, I mean, like, everything started up, you know, thinking how can we do this, how can we do this? So we started working, and here we are.
And it was amazing to see because we had the Tucson, you know, the Mexican baseball fiesta uh-huh. over here. So for like most of the last decade, I think it's been 7 or 8 years now that they've done
14.
14
this
years?
Their 14th
no,
edition.
This is a 14th.
No way. I am behind the times yes. over here. Like, I'm sorry for underestimating that one. So yeah. a little over a decade, we've been doing the Mexican baseball uh-huh. fiesta, bringing in these teams for scrimmages or exhibition games against both the University of Arizona uh-huh. and even players from the Arizona Diamondbacks as well,
yes,
too,
yes,
no?
Yes, it's like our preseason. We the four teams that are really close to the border, which is Hermosillo, Navajo, we used to play there, Obregón, and then Mexicali. We've been coming here for the last 14 years. The thing is, the last 6 to 8 years has been really successful. They struggled at the beginning too. So the last, maybe that's why you have, you know.
Understood.
Yeah, but it's a really good event, really. I mean, people get into it, and we're really excited that this weekend's going to start off, you know. So
everybody always thinks of Mexico and its association and love for soccer, right? Mm-hmm. Football. And on a national level, I would say that is of course true. Having lived and spent a lot of time with businesses and whatnot in Mexico, but in northern Mexico,
yeah.
baseball is king.
Yeah,
you know?
Baseball king.
Explain
yeah.
the popularity of baseball in northern Mexico. Like, how did that get so popular?
Well, that league started 80 years ago. The league, Liga Mexicana del Pacifico, and then it just kept growing. It was four teams. Then it kept growing. And now we're 10 teams, but in the northern part of Mexico, there's only baseball. Our passion is baseball. I don't think there's even a soccer field, you know, in that part of the country. So it's baseball, being close to the United States and being baseball, you know, national pastime. Maybe that influences a bit. But yeah, our sport is baseball. In that northern part of Mexico.
Without a doubt. And this is high-quality baseball as well, too. Like, major league players both come up and down, like, into this league as well, too. Let's talk about the duration of the season. Like, how long does the season go for in Liga del Pacifico?
We start October 16th, and then it goes all the way through the last date of December. That's 2.5 months.
Okay.
That's the season. We have 34 home games. And all January, playoffs take place in January. So if you get to the finals, you basically play all January. And then after that, the champion goes and gets the ticket to go and play the Caribbean World Series.
Right, the Series Caribe.
Yes, which is played the first week of February. And that's where it all ends.
Basically, so, right around the time that Major League Baseball spring uh-huh. training starts, right? And that's done on purpose, I'm sure,
of course,
right?
Yeah, schedule is like on purpose. Baseball players in Mexico, they don't, like in the States, the season's really long and they have their off time, of course. But in Mexico, there's two leagues that everything's scheduled for the players to have a job year round. So either in the summertime, you're playing in the Mexica Liga Mexicana de Baseball. And then after that's over, they just switch over and play the Winter League, which is our league. And then, it ends in the Caribbean World Series, and then spring training, because a lot of players go and play in the States, so spring training starts, so that's a full circle.
So in the history of the Mayos, I was looking it up, like there are some heavy hitting, pun intended, major league players that came out of the Mayos from Navajo. Uh-huh. Tell us a few of the names that our listeners would know that have played for your baseball team.
Maybe Ricky Henderson, you heard about him?
Yeah, Ricky, yeah, little guy named Ricky Henderson. He just passed away last year,
yes,
huh? What a baseball great Ricky yes. Henderson was. So Ricky Henderson played for the Mayos.
Yes, he played there. We taught him how to steal bases at the Mayos. So there's a lot of history. Kevin Yukulis, Matt Stairs,
Troy Nixon, Kevin Millar.
Yeah.
These are all big name major league players, right? That play in this league over here. Tucson is going to be in for a real treat for baseball on this one.
Yeah, that's the real job, Grant. We need to let people know which kind of baseball they're gonna be attended to. I mean, we like to think that we are the third largest league in the world. I mean, just take on the scoop of this. There's MLB, of course.
Sure.
And then there's Japan, and then there's our league. So in the level of performance and the level of and the kind of people that attend our parks, if you measure it by volume, we are the third league. So we're really excited, and I think Tucson's in for a treat. Once they get it, I mean, I think they're gonna show up at the stadium. They're gonna see quality baseball, and we're really excited about that.
I think we're really excited here in Tucson. I mean, this has really been a long time coming for the old Pueblo. So many talks, so many rumors, even the secrecy of what was going on with the team, because there were rumblings for probably the better portion of a year that perhaps we might get a Liga de Pacifico team over here. How about the reception in Navajoa, though? Like, were the residents upset in a way that when teams leave, they get upset? I would think that would be a little bit of a spicy issue.
Yeah. Of course, I mean, Once the word was out, I mean, it was not pleasant, you know, for us, for our family. And I understand that, you know, baseball is passionate, sports are passionate, and they lost their team. So believe me, I made all the effort to stay there. Maybe I overstayed it for 5 years, just trying to make it work. But the league kept growing, and the city was shrinking. So, I mean, it just didn't make sense.
No, understood. And there are stadium deals involved with this one as well, too, right? If you don't have the proper concession stands, you don't have the proper merch setups, you don't have the proper bathrooms built for 2025, not things that were built in 1970 or 1980, because the world has changed, right? Like, we keep a lot of old stadiums in mind. You think of Fenway Park or something like this. You think of Wrigley. But those only exist now both because of the lore and because, you know, nearly $1 billion has been reinvested into each of them to modernize them as well, too. They don't look anything like they did 100 years ago. Yeah. There's no question.
They only kept the name.
Right. Absolutely. It's the name, but like the insides have been completely redone in every way, shape, or form. And I imagine that weighed very heavily in your family's decision to move the team up to Tucson, no?
Yeah, exactly. And we actually tried to make it work, and we started fixing the stadium bit by bit, but I mean, it was too much. And then Tucson made sense, and here we are. It took a lot of effort for a lot of people to make this happen. So now that we're here, we really need the people's support to stay here, you know, to make Tucson our own and make Tucsonians have their own team.
I love it. I think this is great, Victor. And I am just so appreciative of you guys for taking the entrepreneurial risk to bring your team here to the old Pueblo. We've been thirsty for baseball, and now it is time for us to put our money where our mouth is, right?
Exactly.
It's time for the listeners to show up over there.
Yes.
But speaking of showing up, we're going to show up for a few great local advertisers right now and take a quick break. But when we come back, more exciting talk about the Tucson baseball team with Victor Cuevas Jr. and Sr. We're talking all things local sports here on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk.
Hey, this Saturday, join KVOI 10:30 The Voice at the U of A Hispanic Heritage Tailgate starting at 8:30, Bear Down Field, just north of the stadium, adjacent to the stadium on the north side. Celebrate Hispanic heritage and the kickoff of the Big 12 home stretch of the college football season as Arizona takes on Oklahoma State at noon. 10:30 The Voice will be there. Don't miss it.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we're lucky enough to have a couple more segments over here with Victor Cuevas Jr. and Seniors, owners of the Tucson baseball team. Their season's coming up in just a couple weeks. That home opener is on the 16th?
16th. October 16th.
I can't wait. Really excited for that one. At the break, we were discussing professional baseball as a whole and how cities can support pro baseball teams. How big was Navajoa? Like, what was the population to support a baseball team?
Well, Navajoa is 150,000 people. That's it. So that's why we were struggling, you know.
That's quite small. What's the next smallest city in that league? Like, what kind of cities were you going up against?
Well, Obregon and Mochis have the similar population. They should be in 350, 400,000, something like that. And then they just jump, like Hermosillo, 1 million, Mexicali, over 1 million, Guadalajara, 3 million. You know, so it's we competed against really big cities.
And is there a salary cap in this league? Is this like Major League Baseball where there's no salary cap, or is this like the NFL where the teams are capped at what they can spend on their players?
There's no salary cap, but it's in the talks to start, because it's really getting out of hand. So it's in the talks, but right now, I mean, it's just open.
Understood. So when you're a foreign team, right, that you're a part of a league that's in Mexico, but the players are mostly of Mexican descent, how do the taxes work? I know for years Canadian teams in Major League Baseball struggled with this, right? The Toronto Blue Jays and the former Montreal Expos always had trouble when their players who would make Major League Baseball non-salary cap kind of money would suddenly fall in the 65% Canadian tax bracket, right, compared to the U.S. It made it not competitive for those Canadian teams. And of course, the Expos ended up leaving. Is this a benefit or a defect for you to be in the United States as opposed to being in Mexico with respect to player recruitment?
No, I mean, regarding player recruitment, is I think this works better for us because, remember, our league, our roster is allowed to have 8 foreigners. So all foreigners want to play here, so they are calling because it's better for them, you know, to live in the States, you know, instead of moving to Mexico, being close to home. A lot of players live in Phoenix, so it's really comfortable for them. So regarding that, we have a little bit of advantage because it's easier for us to recruit them, you know.
Understood. I think that could be a unique advantage.
Uh-huh.
And you've got players right now that are in the farm system on Major League Baseball teams, on the Tucson baseball team right now,
yes,
correct?
Right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a draft every year. We do a national draft and an import draft in our league. So the national draft is the same day. We just do one first. We do the national one, and we can take all the prospects, you could say, from Mexico that go from an age of 13 years old and old. So you can get high school guys.
That you can
feel they have a future. So the only rule we have, you have to respect the territory of the team. So if we have a guy that we like and he's 15 years old and he's from Hermosillo, I need to wait for that kid to be 17 for me to draft him. But if he's not from one of our 10 cities, you could draft the kid if he's 14 years old.
Interesting.
So we do have in our 70 player reserve list, we do have about 10 to 15 kids that are 14 to 19 years old that are either signed by MLB or already in the talks because MLB needs to wait for the 16-year-old deadline. So, but that's kind of how we build the reserve.
Amazing. So it sounds like Tucson's in for a real treat over here. This is high, high quality baseball. And let's talk about stadiums just a little bit. At the break, you were discussing, you know, some of the improvements that you had to make to the stadium in Navajoa. Tell me about Keno. Is this a big improvement for you guys in terms of stadium? Or what do we need to do to improve upon it if it's not?
Well, Keno is perfect. I mean, the field is perfect. It works for us. It's 11,000 capacity. Believe it or not, it's still one of the smallest in the league. Because we're competing, Hermosillo is 16,000, Obregón is 17,000, and Culiacán is 22,000. I mean, there's huge stadiums and brand new. I mean, the oldest is maybe 10 years. But Keno works for us. Keno works, I mean, from where we come from, it's a big improvement. The facilities are great, you know, where the players, you know, the clubhouse, the batting cages, everything's great. You know, the outside fields for our training program is, everything's great. I mean, it's a big improvement. We hope we do so good that we have to improve that stadium. But I mean, but that comes later. First things first.
Because the stadium was a point of ire politically in Tucson for many years, right? When Keno was built, when it was called Tucson Electric Park, and it was built in the late 1990s, around 1997 or so, if I remember correctly, there was a lot of discussion that it was too far to the southwest, right? That this, geographically speaking, wasn't in the heart of town. A lot of people bemoaned that maybe we even lost spring training because we didn't build a stadium, say, downtown or even in the far northwest side of town, and that major league players didn't want to take a bus. They were too spoiled, right? The prima donnas to do this sort of thing. Has the neighborhood grown up around the stadium right now? There are now restaurants and things like that as well too, correct?
Yes, the neighborhood has grown, and remember that a big part of that success we plan to have is that the Mexican community lives around that, and then they're the ones that know our baseball. So they're going to show up, right? They're going to show up. They're going to see. First, we think they're going to go see their teams coming to play here. But it's our job to switch them and start rooting for Tucson. And the biggest challenge for us, we think, to make this successful in the long run is have all the community involved, not just Mexicans or Latinos. It's have all the community involved, and that's our challenge. If we achieve that, Tucson's going to have baseball for 100 years.
I love it. Truly, this was the biggest loss, I think, that our community had on this one. We used to love, even I always come from a perspective of the restaurant business, and we loved having major league players show up in our restaurants and bars. I remember working in the 1990s and being like, wow, there's Frank Thomas and Albert Bell and these big names that would hang out in Tucson quite regularly. And now we're going to get the opportunity to see some of these big names poking their way through as they play in these leagues as well, too, no?
Yeah, exactly. And then maybe our first year, the community won't know most of the players, especially the Mexican descent. But in a short period of time, they will get to know them because they're really stars. I mean, so they're going to perform, and then we're going to start building, that fan base that roots for their players. So it's going to be good for the community. You're going to see a lot of players in the restaurants. You're going to see a lot of players, getting out, and so I think Tucson's for a treat. Maybe they don't get it yet, but they will.
So when are going to be the predominant game days for the leagues over here? Is this all Saturdays? Is there like specific days of the week?
So we play always 3-game series. We will start playing. We actually have our opening day Thursday, 16th of October, and our first series is right away. 17, 18, and 19, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And we will stay for about 3 weeks playing during the weekends. Then we switch to Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for the whole month of November and the first week of December. And then we switch back to Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Neat. So there's going to be some weekends and some weekday games as well, too. That's very cool and probably a great idea as well, because, of course, Saturdays can get pretty crowded when you're competing against the University of Arizona, which is the 800-pound gorilla of local Tucson sports right now, right? It's hard when you're coming up against a home football game or a home basketball game to keep Tucson's interest. And so I think this will be an interesting challenge for the team from a season running from mid-October to, as you said, basically year's end. Hopefully we'll be rolling through January in the playoffs as well too, and see some longer runs.
We will.
I like it. There's confidence over there in Victor Cuevas for sure. Confidence. I love that one, sir. I love that one. So have you guys relocated your families like up here in Tucson as well too?
Yeah, we go back and forward. But now, I mean, we're staying longer here, to get everything ready. Yeah, the wife and we had to bring the wife in.
Happy wife, happy life over there, Victor. You got to work on that one and make sure she loves it and she's happy. If you need any tips or help with that one, please let me know. Why don't we take one more quick break over here and hear from some of our great local sponsors that help keep local radio alive. And we've got, of course, another segment, a great interview about keeping local baseball alive. Victor Cuevas Jr. and Seniors, owners of the Tucson baseball team. One more segment with me, Grant Kruger, on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the final segment of The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we've got Victor Cuevas Jr. and Sr., owners of the Tucson baseball team. Their season's coming up. We're starting on the 16th of October against the evil Hermosillo Naranjeros, right? Is that the biggest team in the league? Is that the Yankees of the Liga del Pacifico? Who's the big money guys?
Well, there's a couple of them, but Hermosillo is still the team that has the most championships. I think 16 or 17, something like that. So they're still...
And the Mayos have two championships,
yes, two
if champs. I remember correctly?
Yes, two championships.
For yes. now, you're right? Yet.
Yes.
I love it. Hey, so speaking of the Tucson baseball team, let's talk naming a little bit over here, right? You're coming as Tucson baseball team this year, and the same way that Utah had a hockey team, you know, they kind of stole our Arizona hockey team, but went 1 year as this Utah hockey club before putting a name on this one. Are you leaving it the Tucson baseball team? You got a name in mind? What's your process going to be for naming, guys?
We will have a naming contest during the whole season. We're planning to have a couple phases for the naming contest. The first phase, we will put our ears to the community. Give us your ideas, what you think, and we will need to do our due legal trademarks to see if we can go ahead with the ideas that the community wants. Once we do all that filter, we will put some names out in a poll so that you can vote it during the season. And we will have a date, like, we don't have it yet, but we will have one game on December where we will announce the name of the team that the community chose.
I love it. You do have to think of the trademark thing, though. I think most people wouldn't think that, oh, gosh, that name is already, quote, unquote, taken.
Yes.
Right? There's probably a whole list of names that you guys were like, this would be really awesome. And then you go to the Secretary of State website, and you're like, oh.
I think we went over 2,000 names. That was my face when I did. And I mean everything's registered, because the universities, they have, there's a lot of universities have their name and they're registered, so that takes up not just professional sports. I mean, the universities have their, you know, like the Wildcats.
You know? Right, yeah, you just can't be the Wildcats.
And it's not just NCAA and MLB or NFL and all the professional sports. It's high schools. Even high schools registers their names for the merch they print out. So you get high schools, you get hospitals, you get everything. Once you start talking about merch and all of that, you get all business.
Understood. It's way more complicated than most people would think.
Yeah,
I would say.
When I first heard of the Sugar Skulls, you know, the football team.
Yep.
And then I said, what an interesting name, you know, the Sugar Skulls. And when I got into, you know, Regenerative, then I got it. I know what they call it, you know, the
right.
Sugar Skulls.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't taken yet. That was available. Yeah, I get it. Beggars can't be choosers, as they say in some capacity. It's probably more difficult than most people would give credit for sure.
Yes, it is. So I think we have to come out with a composite name, like two words, not just the Lobos or the Hawks, because everything's taken, you know. So we have to think outside the box. I mean, the community has to think outside the box when choosing their team name.
Yeah, even getting the URL, just even the web page on that one is probably pretty tough as well, too. Speaking of that, why don't we talk about the websites? Like, where can people interact right now? We need the community to go out there and support and show up, not just on October 16th, on day one. Mm-hmm. I bet opening day is going to be a real banger. But, like, show up on day 7, right, or 10. Like, where can the community go out and get engaged and find and buy tickets for the Tucson baseball team?
Our webpage is tucsonbaseball.net. You will find all the info for the team during the season there. Right now we have our opening day program, and you can buy the tickets through there. It will send you through our platform through there. It will be easier for everybody. And we have Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, YouTube, all of TikTok, all up in Tucson baseball team.
I love it. And are you looking for more sponsors? Are there sponsorship opportunities if there's business owners out there that want to engage and interact with the Tucson baseball team? How does that work?
Great point. Just contact us. There's a lot of opportunity there yet. And we need sponsors. We really need sponsors for this to work out. We know the time frame is not the best. And we're coming up at the end of the year. We know at the end of the fiscal year that all the budget spread around, but either way, I mean, just contract, us make the contract and then we can work something out for this season and for future seasons.
I love it. And are there season ticket packages then as well too? So yes. Very much like...
Yes.
Yes.
Right now we have three season packages, the Fan Pass, the Desert Pass, and the Legacy Pass. Fan Pass is just the seat. Desert Pass, it comes with a little bit of perks like VIP access, free parking. And if you go all the way, you get all the way with merch. You get a jersey and all that. So you can find in TucsonBaseball.net, you will go and you can see the three. They will explain what it brings in each one of them. And you can choose your seat, and you're welcome for the season.
You guys have brought me some really awesome Tucson baseball team hats over here, and I got to say thank you for that. These are looking great. Can fans go out there and get merch? Like, where can fans go and engage and get the merchandise right now to support our Tucson baseball club?
They will be able to get the merch at the souvenir store, the novelty shop at Kino Complex, hopefully next week.
Amazing. That's coming up pretty soon then. So basically you're going to have the retail component set up like in the next week or two. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have obviously our season starting on the 16th. We just started the preseason, right? I saw you guys had some games in Nogales as well too.
Yeah.
To show off the preseason.
Yeah, the team got here about 3 weeks ago now, which, you know, to start our training program. And we have some games at Nogales, Sonora, and Arizona against Hermosillo. We did really good, actually, against them.
Hey, Matt, are we coming up on time over here, my friend? Oh, we're going to have to close this one up over here. I want to say thank you for the Cuevas father and son, Victor Cuevas Jr. and Sr., owners of the Tucson baseball team. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday with us here on The Morning Voice.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you for having us, Grant, and looking for everybody to meet you at the stadium.
Looking forward to having all of you out here as well, too. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday with us on The Morning Voice. Looking forward to having you guys next Wednesday, and looking forward to seeing you guys at the stadium the 16th against the Hermosillo Naranjeros.
Thank you.